pressure of my own. It grasped my hand firmly, still smiling as it shook. "The compact is sealed," it said. "You'll live." The fire in my fingers blazed, going from an ember to a forest fire in the matter of a moment. I cried out, trying to pull away, and the shape gripped me even harder, pinning me in place until the flame died, leaving me cold and empty. Then it pushed me away, and the country road was gone, and the sunlight was gone, and Mary was gone, and the water, which had never really disappeared, only faded into inconsequential distance, came surging back, and I was gone, just like everything else. I was gone. Chapter 25. Oh, my sweet girl, I will always love you, no matter what. Now get out there and kick their asses back to the Stone Age. Evelyn Baker. Lowryland. About to have an even worse night, which is sort of an accomplishment right now. I woke up, pressed against the base of the bronze Laura and Lizzie statue at the center of the Fairyland Hub, my left arm pinned under my body, one leg slung up onto the statue itself, leaving me in an inelegant spread-eagle position that made me incredibly grateful for the existence of jeans. I groaned. The sound awoke a pounding in my head that was almost worse than the tingling in my arm. Pain meant I was alive. The Crossroads had kept their side of the bargain. With the thought came the realization that I couldn't feel my magic anymore. There was no fire in my fingers, and no void in the pit of my stomach for Colin to use as a drain. Regret grew heavy in my chest. My magic had been so happy to see me when I had stepped through the broken mirror. It had stopped hurting me as soon as I had apologized. And now I had sold it to something I didn't understand, but knew enough to be afraid of. I didn't deserve to get it back. Even if I did whatever the Crossroads would eventually ask of me, I didn't deserve it. That was a moral dilemma for later. Right now, I needed to find my friends. I needed to find Sam. If the Crossroads had saved me, they should have saved him too. But I had a lifetime of Mary warning me about the kind of tricks they like to pull. They were a malicious genie trapped in a bottle that spanned the globe, and they would cheat if they had the opportunity to do so. They might have saved Sam from drowning, only to leave him washed up on the roller coaster tracks, ready to be crushed to death when the train spotter tried to pull another fast one. They might do almost anything. I had to move. That was easier said than done. What felt like every muscle in my body protested as I levered myself away from the statue and off the ground. The last time I'd hurt this much, it had been because I'd been hip-checked into the rail around the track by a blocker twice my size. She'd gotten a trip to the penalty box. I'd gotten a bruise that ran the length of my right thigh, black and yellow and blooming like a flower. The thought reminded me of something else. When the wall had cracked and the water had come crashing down, I'd been wearing my backpack. I wasn't wearing it now. I looked around, finally spotting the nylon strap in the bushes to my left. I couldn't run, but I could walk quickly, and that was exactly what I did. Like everything else, the backpack was drenched. Anything paper that had been shoved in there was ruined now. My skates were soaked. They were still skates, and they still fit my feet, even wet. Hell, the rest of me was so wet that I barely even noticed the discomfort as I kicked off my sodden shoes and yanked the skates on over my equally sodden socks. Everything squelched. I tied the laces tighter. The blisters I was going to get from this were tomorrow's problem. Right now, I had bigger things to worry about. Like Sam. Stopping to put my skates on might have felt like a waste of time, but it was actually anything but. Skating bruised and battered is what derby girls do. I might not be able to walk faster than a hobble for the next few days, and that was fine, because I could still skate like the top jammer of the slasher chicks. "I'm the final girl, you fuckers," I muttered, and pushed off, steadily gathering speed as I began to skate through the area, looking for my boyfriend. Sam was a big guy. He wouldn't have been thrown into any trees, or at least he wouldn't have stayed there once the water rolled back. If he'd been knocked out, which wasn't a bad assumption, he would also be in his heavier fury form. That was what really worried me. Monkeys have denser bones than humans do, and as a yokai, Sam had more in common physically with the simian side of his heritage. The water had pinned me to the tunnel roof, but Sam, he would have sunk like a stone. There was no telling how much water he'd inhaled while I was bargaining with the crossroads for our lives. They'd promised me he would live. They hadn't promised immortality, or indestructibility, or even that he'd still be in one piece when I found him. Even with Mary there to keep me from screwing up completely, the situation had been too dire to allow for the sort of careful negotiation that had really needed to happen. I skated faster, my heart hammering in my chest, my mind spinning out every dire scenario it could come up with. And there were quite a few of those. The curse of an active imagination. The most active imagination in the world couldn't prepare me for coming around a bend in the path and finding Sam sprawled, motionless, in the middle of a flower bed. Sam! I skated to his side as fast as I could, dropping to my knees before I'd come to a complete stop. I immediately regretted my lack of knee pads as the pavement stripped away several layers of skin. That was going to sting. And it didn't matter, because he still wasn't moving. Fighting to keep it together, I pressed my ear against his chest, relaxing only when I heard the distant, steady beat of his heart. I was unconscious. He wasn't dead. Hey, I sat up, gripping his shoulders and giving him a shake. His head lolled, but he didn't respond. I shook harder. Hey, wake up. We still need to go fight a bunch of asshole Harry Potter wannabes to get our friends back. Still, he didn't respond. I sighed. I didn't want to do this, I said, and slapped him. Hitting your friends without their consent is generally not a good idea, and is a good way to end a friendship. Hitting your significant others without their consent is the sort of thing that leads to breakups and restraining orders. Under the circumstances, and in the absence of smelling salts, I figured he'd forgive me. Sam groaned. I slapped him again. He groaned louder. I pulled back my hand for one more hit, and stopped as something grabbed my wrist. Something wet, and hairy, and flexible. A glance confirmed that it was Sam's tail. I felt something in my chest unsnarl even before I turned to look at him. His eyes were open. He looked confused, but his eyes were open. He was looking at me and he was alive. Crossroads might have tried to cheat. They hadn't quite succeeded. Annie, he said, bewildered. What the fuck? Their train spotter threw a roller coaster at us. He blinked. I hate that those words made sense in that order. But it does explain why I feel like I've been hit by a train. Because you were. I stood, bracing myself to keep from rolling away before I offered him my hands. Up. We have to move. They probably think we're both dead, but that's only going to last until their route which talks to the paths, or someone thinks to come out and look for a body. More hate, said Sam. He took my hand, wobbling as he got his feet under himself and slowly, awkwardly stood. Then he shook himself, sending drops of water scattering in all directions. When he was done, he was drier and fluffier than I'd ever seen him. It was enough to make me smile, if only for a moment. Nice hair. You're one to talk. He ran a hand over the top of his head as he looked around, tail curling and uncurling anxiously behind him. You know this place better than I do. Where do we go? This way, I said, and pointed before I started to skate. Neither of us was at our best, but I'm a good enough skater that I was able to build up a good head of steam, and when something went whipping by to my left, it was no surprise to see that it was Sam, using the lights and overhanging tree branches to travel through the park at an impressive speed. He was holding back, circling me, allowing me to be the one who guided us to the goal. I flashed him a thumbs up and turned, heading down a narrow side path toward the Midsummer Night's Scream. Their train spotter had been strong enough to wrest the sea dragon off its tracks, but that would have taken a lot out of him. And unless they were running a coaster somewhere else in the park, which I was pretty sure I would have been able to hear, he was still going to be drained. That was good. He couldn't hit us with another train. That didn't mean Emily was at anything other than full strength. And while route witches are more defensive than offensive, they're still dangerous. With the two witches dead, We were down to a route witch, an ambulomancer, a train spotter, and a sorcerer. Not the sort of spread that seemed like a good time, but at least none of them were particularly complimentary. Their powers weren't designed to work together. The witches had probably been able to bridge the gaps, making the Cabal more cooperative, less competitive. Now they were gone, and we were racing toward a four-way boss fight. Sam! He stopped swinging and waited for me to catch up, moving more slowly to keep pace as I said. Joshua's the train spotter. Don't get between him and anything with more than four wheels. Emily's going to have trouble getting a fix on you if you stay off the ground. He looked concerned. What about you? You're on the ground? I'm hoping the roller skates will confuse her. It was a foolish hope. Wheels have never confused a route witch before. I was more hoping I could deliver an elbow to her chin before she had a chance to do anything. Nope, said Sam, and grabbed my shoulders with his feet, wrapping his tail around my waist for good measure, before he resumed his forward momentum. Not going to go on a hope. Going to go on a definitely, and also we're going to survive. Now, tell me where to turn. I thought about arguing, and decided against it just as quickly, gripping his ankles to stabilize myself as I said, Head left. The coaster will be right ahead of us. Got it. He didn't seem to be weighed down by my extra mass at all, and kept swinging smoothly onward, expression grim. What else do I need to know? Without his wand, Colin has a lot of technique, but not that much raw power. I think that's why he was siphoning mine. A sorcerer who didn't have the strength to back up his threats would be easy pickings in the wider world, unless he surrounded himself with allies and occasionally tricked a younger, stupider magic user into doing something that they shouldn't. I had made him stronger. I had made him legitimate. I had never felt so foolish in my life. What about the other lady? She's an ambulomancer. She draws power from distance traveled, but only when she does it on her own two feet. I hated trying to unsnarl the delicate distinctions between the different types of magic users. The fact that Sam wasn't slowing down, and I had to keep pulling my legs up to keep from slamming into things wasn't helping. A route witch gets power from distance, period. Roller skates, bare feet, cars, whatever. As long as they're on the ground, they're gaining strength. An ambulomancer gains power faster, but has to keep their feet anchored. What do they do? I was about to answer when Sam swung into an invisible barrier, losing his grip on the branch he'd been using and sending us both toppling toward the ground. I only had a few seconds to figure out my landing, calling on everything I'd learned from gymnastics and cheerleading, and a few things I'd learned from roller derby. I bent my knees, braced my shoulders, and hit hard. Dropping 8 feet onto pavement in roller skates may never rank among my top 10 favorite activities. At least I was in footwear designed to protect my ankles. I've seen my sister do similar drops in high heels, and somehow her legs are not shapely sacks of gravel barely held together by her muscular system. Sam dropped next to me, landing harder but with a little less visible pain. He gave me a wide-eyed look. Assuming that's what they do, he said. I nodded. Yeah, barriers. Ambulomancers are the reason that sometimes a road goes on forever, and sometimes it's like a quarter of a mile long. So how do we fight it? Normally, this was where I would have called for Mary, or better yet, Rose. Normally, I wasn't dealing with a route witch. I frowned at the nothingness in front of us before saying, They want us there. They want us to come to them. So there has to be a way in. Won't that be like running into a blind canyon because the villain wants you to? It would be, except that it's not possible to have only one way in. That would mess up the pressure. I looked wildly around, finally spotting the charred wall near the site of the first accident in my recent chain. This way. I skated for the employee door with Sam on my heels. When I found it locked, I pulled one of the knives from inside my shirt. How I hadn't been shredded by my own weapons when the water pinned me to the ceiling, I had no idea, and slammed it down on the hasp, breaking the cheap padlock. Sam blinked, looking impressed, and didn't say anything. He just followed. We made our way across the employee walkway to the first tunnel door. Unlike the gate, it wasn't locked. I pulled it open, and Sam grinned a sharp, virtually feral expression. Got it, he said. Good. I said, and stepped into the tunnel. The thing about road witches, whatever their type, is that they're limited. Roads and feet and trains. Boats and planes, and once, when we were more dedicated to sending people down into the bowels of the earth to bring back armfuls of riches, mines. An ambulomancer could no more wall off a tunnel than a train spotter could read the story of a road. But the Tommyknockers have been rare or entirely gone for decades now, outside of places like Kentucky, where the coal mines still thrive. Colin didn't have one. His ambulomancer didn't have the employee passageways. Sam didn't have any of that background. He just knew that I'd gone for the tunnels, and he trusted me enough to follow me underground. It was a humbling thought, knowing that he trusted me that much. I was going to do my best to make sure I deserved it. It was hard to follow the twists and turns in the dark. I had been working mostly in Fairyland for long enough that I knew the way I had to go. And after only 2 false starts, we were standing at the door that would take us into the landscaping of the Midsummer Night's Scream. I put a finger to my lips in an exaggerated hushing gesture. Sam nodded. Then he leaned in, pushed my finger aside, and kissed me. His lips tasted like chlorinated water, and he smelled of wet fur, and I grabbed his arms and clung to him, counting off the seconds I felt we could afford to spend on this small, utterly self-indulgent gesture. When I reached 10, I let him go, offered a tight smile, and opened the door on the dark tangle of the bushes that hid it from casual view. The voices reached us immediately. "Joshua should be back by now. Are you sure you didn't make your shell too strong?" Colin. He sounded peevish and unnerved, which was fine by me. The more off balance he was, the better our odds were. "Something hit it," said a female voice. The ambulomancer. I wished I'd taken the time to learn her name. I'd been too trusting. I'd allowed them to lull me into a false sense of security. And I'd done half the work for them, treating Lowryland as some sort of magical, uncrackable safe haven against all the people who would do me harm. I'd been so focused on the threat of the Covenant that I'd never considered the possibility of danger from within. "That's what happens to shells," said Emily. "Yes, but something hit it without shattering it," said the ambulomancer. "Your little apprentice is probably walking around the edges looking for the door I left her. She'll be here soon, or she's unconscious on the ground and Joshua will bring her back. Either way, I did my job, and either way, she's only still a threat because you did your part wrong. She should be loyal by now." "You enjoyed her power as much as the rest of us," snapped Colin. "Don't be a child, Andrea. If I drained her any faster, she wouldn't have been able to regenerate for years, and we would have lost all the good she's done us." I turned to Sam and pointed upward. He nodded, catching my meaning. And I barely had time to take a breath before his hands and tail were around my waist, and he was propelling himself nimbly into the air, carrying us past the brush in a single, powerful leap. We landed in front of the cluster of magic users, him with bent knees, me standing as straight and seemingly effortless as any pom-pom girl since the dawn of cheerleading time. Sometimes, it's all about making an entrance. Emily jumped. The ambulomancer, Andrea, clapped a hand over her mouth to stop a shriek. And Colin, whose back was toward us, went ramrod straight and tense, his shoulders forming an iron bar beneath the jacket of his tailored suit. "I asked you to teach me, not rob me," I said coldly. "Give back my friends, and this can be over."
"Demanding as always," said Colin.
He turned slowly, looking first at me. And then at Sam. His lips pulled back in a sneer.
"Beauty and the Beast, indeed. Have you considered what the children will look like? It's a disgrace."
"Nah," I said broadly. "My family'll be cool with it. We've been cool with Stranger."
Now was the moment to put that dramatic entrance to good use. I took a step forward, Sam's tail obligingly uncoiling from around my waist, my eyes fixed on Colin. And my hands spread by my sides like the fire was still there. Cheerleading and roller derby have this much in common. Image and attitude are sometimes everything. You're going to eat grass and track no matter how good you are. What people will remember is how you get back on your feet.
So I advanced on those people like Danny emerging from the fire, like Jean stepping out of the Phoenix Force, like, well, like me, Antimony Price, the girl who burns and does not die.
I don't believe we've been properly introduced, I said. My hands moved, plucking knives from the waistband of my wet jeans and holding them low against my hips, as deadly as the fire I had given to the crossroads, and a lot harder for unethical sorcerers to steal.
My name is Antimony. Antimony Price. Maybe you remember my grandparents?
Andrea went white, taking a quick step backward and almost tripping over one of the low decorative walls used to shape the walkways.
You're a Price?
It's hot when your name scares the shit out of people, Sam observed. She's lying, said Colin dismissively.
Don't listen to this foolish little girl who thought she could take advantage of our kindness and wound up in over her head. She's not a Price. They're all dead.
She stinks of travel and the grave, said Emily. Her tone was uneasy, and she was looking at me with a new intensity. Alice Price grew up among ghosts, and her godmother was an ambulomancer. We knew her very well.
Thomas Price was a fool who chose to fritter his potential on a farm girl, snapped Colin. He died childless. He disappeared, the father of two, after making a deal with the Crossroads for the life of his wife. My grandmother, I said, keeping my voice calm, keeping my hand steady. I take after him in so many more ways than you can imagine. If you're not with me, you're against me. And I don't think you want that, do you?
She's bluffing, said Colin. But there was a note of unease in his voice now, like he was reviewing every interaction we'd had and finding at least a few of them questionable. I took another step forward. Andrea took another step back.
No, she said, voice clear and only shaking a little. She's not. I'm out. I don't have the chops for this shit.
Then she turned and fled, racing off into the darkness of the park. Colin scowled.
Is this your plan, child? Say dire things and frighten us all away?
No, I said, and raised my right hand. The knife flew straight and true, embedding itself in Colin's left shoulder before he had a chance to realize what I was about to do. He bellowed, pain and rage and shock all mixed together into a single primal sound. That was Sam's cue. He leaped straight upward, crashing down on Emily while she was still gaping, wide-eyed, at the blood soaking into Colin's sleeve. She went down like a sack of potatoes, Sam crouching on top of her, pinning her to the ground. He rolled his lips back, showing his teeth. She froze. Smart girl. Colin grasped the knife in his shoulder, yanking it loose and flinging it to the ground.
You ungrateful little wretch, he snarled. How dare you? Don't you know who I am?
Yeah, I said. You're the guy whose ass I'm about to kick. Stanley is a human dude from New York. I don't know whether he's ever met a superhero in real life. He's definitely met a cryptid. The cryptid population of New York and New Jersey is staggering. That doesn't mean he knew it was happening. Still, there's one thing he got absolutely right. If you can quip and joke and one-liner your way into a fight, the odds are good that it will throw your opponent off at least enough to make them forget about a few things, like the fact that I was on roller skates. I threw myself into the motion, crouching low and skating as hard as I could across the concrete, smoothed and evened out by the feet of 100,000 tourists, maintained nightly by the Lowryland staff. Colin barely had time to realize what was happening before my shoulder slammed into his stomach. At the same time, I punched him hard in the stab wound I had created, taking him down to the ground with my arm forming a bar across his throat. He landed even harder than Emily had. I couldn't feel bad about that. He glared at me, eyes burning with hatred and with flickering, deep-buried magic. His lips moved as he tried to speak. No sound emerged. I had knocked the air completely out of him, leaving him temporarily silent. Good. I jabbed him again in the stab wound before hissing.
Last chance, asshole. Where are my friends? Give them back to me and maybe you walk away from this.
Colin glared at me. He knew I was lying. I knew I was lying. I knew how this ended.
Colin and his cronies had been hurting people, using Lowryland as the engine of their mischief for a very long time. Losing the boost from my magic wasn't going to stop them. It might slow them down a little, but they would start up again.
Andrea was gone. She was also an ambulomancer. She couldn't do this sort of thing without someone to help her. Emily was going to have other things to worry about as soon as Rose told the Queen of the Rout Witches what she'd been up to.
Colin was a sorcerer. Colin wanted power more than he wanted to survive. If we walked away and left him breathing, he'd start the whole thing up again as soon as he had a new wand. There was no other outcome. I had to kill him.
Behind and above us, there was a snarl as the midsummer night scream rumbled to life.
I glanced up, shocked. Colin laughed. When I looked back down, he was smirking.
Where are your friends? He asked. About 20 seconds from dying.
The whole scenario unfurled like a terrible flower, each piece leading seamlessly to the next as it all came together. I shoved myself away from Colin, looking over my shoulder to find Joshua standing there, his eyes glowing faintly, like a cat's, and his hands raised above my head.
Shit, I hissed.
Joshua was a train spotter, and while he might be almost out of juice after his trick back in the deep down, he could still whisper his wanting to the trains, to any train, and be answered in the affirmative. He could turn the coaster on from a distance. He had turned it on. And Colin was a sorcerer, which meant that blood sacrifice would make him stronger. Colin's smirk grew, became an outright grin.
I think you'll find I'll have a new wand in no time, he said.
The train would crush Fern, Celia, and Megan, imbuing the train, the wheels, everything around it with the trauma of their intentional and carefully orchestrated deaths. Colin would be able to take his pick of materials, crafting a new wand capable of channeling his mystical energy. Everything we'd done would be for nothing. The Cabal would be back in business without missing so much as a step. No, I said, and skated toward Sam, moving fast, trusting him to know what I wanted. There are advantages to having a preternaturally strong, incredibly swift boyfriend. Sam saw me coming, saw the lights coming on along the roller coaster's tracks, and knew what I wanted him to do. If he had issues with it, if he didn't like the idea of flinging me headlong into danger while he stayed with the danger we already had, there wasn't time to discuss it. He stood, making a basket with his hands, and when I was close enough, I jumped, knees together, wheels spinning against the empty air. Sam's hands grasped my calves for only a second before he was flinging me upward as hard as he could, away from the remnants of the Cabal, toward the distant, but rapidly nearing shape of the Midsummer Night Scream. Guess it was time to come up with a plan.
Chapter 26. The survivors decide how well the show went. Always survive. Francis Brown. About to slam into the side of a massive roller coaster. After the first wave of wooden coasters, but before they became trendy again. As a consequence, the only wood involved is in the structures surrounding the track, most of which are actually plastic and steel, both of which require substantially less maintenance. I had never approached the train from this angle, and I didn't have much time to decide where I was going to land. When all else fails, go for the path of least resistance. I braced myself as best I could, and when I reached the sculpted metal trees next to the mouth of the big tunnel, I grabbed on, feeling the metal edges of the branches bite into my palms. My momentum died with a bone-shaking jolt, and I was suddenly hanging there, as vulnerable to physics as anyone. The train was still snarling and growling in its launching bay. It hadn't started moving yet. Why hadn't it started moving yet? Would have made sense to tie my friends to the coaster track, and I knew Colin would want them all to die at the same time for the sake of grinding their last moments as deeply into the structure as possible. But that didn't mean they had to be tied at the same point. I had to think about this logically. Normally, Riders would wind slowly up a wooded path, traveling deep into goblin territory before joining Laura and Lizzie on their lightning-swift journey to freedom. Maintenance crews could ride the ADA-mandated elevator or climb up the stairs built into the structure. That gave 3 access points, and that would probably have felt like 2 too many to Colin and his flunkies. They'd want something that could only be reasonably accessed one way, via the track. The train was still warming up. Turning on a modern, high-tech roller coaster with nothing but magic probably wasn't easy. That didn't mean I had much time. Pulling myself up with shaking arms, I swung my feet over onto the track. My skates, formerly an advantage, made it virtually impossible for me to get my balance back. I ground my teeth and kept trying until I felt steady enough to let the tree go. The track had been built to be maintained, thankfully, and there was room for both my feet. I caught my breath, testing the faint downward slope of the hill's ledge. Then, with a silent prayer and a lot more silent cursing, I lifted my toes, releasing my brakes, and let go. Fun facts about roller skates. The only brakes they have are the ones on the toes. Otherwise, physics does most of the hard work. Which meant that when I released my toe stops at the top of a coaster hill, gravity kicked in and kicked my ass, pulling me down what felt like a sheer drop until my hair was whipping straight out behind me and my lungs ached with the effort to keep myself from screaming. All my focus was on staying on the tracks, keeping myself yoked to the great steel structure that had never been designed for something as soft and squishy as a human being. I'm going to die, I thought, as I hit the bottom of the hill and started up the next one, propelled by nothing more or less than my own momentum. I'm going to hit the loop-de-loop, and there's going to be nothing to keep me on the track, and I'm going to die. I'm going to... A dark hole loomed up ahead of me, lit by a flickering rainbow sheen, like bioluminescent fungus. This time I gave up and screamed. I'd been so concerned about the big loops that I'd forgotten the goblin caverns at the bottom of the ride. I dropped into the darkness, my skates suddenly soaked through again as I hit the artificial lake at the bottom. It wasn't deep, designed to kick up water and delight guests, but it was there. And it gave me an idea. I threw myself to the side, abandoning the track for the water, and splashed down hard, sliding a few feet before the water finished absorbing the shock of my landing. I came up gasping, no longer bound to the structure of the track, and no longer aided by its merciless progress either. That was fine. I needed some control over where I was going, given what was likely to come next. From here, the track rose up into the darkness, the flashes of rainbow light becoming less frequent, while never quite stopping altogether. Total darkness was terrifying. Near darkness was exhilarating. I wiped my wet palms against my wetter jeans and started climbing. I was almost to the top of the first hill when my hand hit something that wasn't metal. It was soft, yielding, and mammalian. I paused, considering the silence of the something, and touched it again, more intentionally. "Fern," I whispered. "Annie?" She sounded hopeful but wary, like she knew this couldn't possibly be anything but a trick. "Is it really you? Why didn't you make a sound when I touched you? I thought you were them, and I thought they'd leave me alone if they thought I was still knocked out." Fern's voice was even wispier and softer than it usually was. She was clearly fighting to remain calm. "Are you here to save me?" "Well, of course I am. Couldn't leave a teammate, could I? Slasher chicks forever." I felt along the edge of her body, finding the ropes that bound her to the track. I had knives. What I didn't have was a good way of catching her. "Fern, I need you to reduce your density as much as you can, all right? When I cut you loose, you're gonna fall. You need to be ready to fall."
"I'm ready,"
she said bravely. And I had never loved her more, or felt worse about sucking her into my fight. It only took a few seconds for me to slice away the ropes that bound her. Fern dropped immediately, knocking against me as lightly as a balloon before slinging herself over the track's edge and hanging on by her fingertips.
"Now what?"
I took a breath. "Now, I find the others." I couldn't see Fern, but I could hear her concern as she said,
"I don't know where they are. I woke up here."
"I know they're on this track." I knew that Colin wanted their deaths to be painful, swift, and grouped together.
but when I was talking about something that moved as fast as a roller coaster, as long as hitting Fern didn't derail it, it would be able to finish climbing the hill in a matter of seconds.
Sam's outside. Go help him.
But I...
Please. The coaster would finish powering up soon. I needed Fern clear. She lightly touched the top of my hand.
Be safe,
she said, and was gone, drifting down to the dark waters below. I resumed my climb. I hadn't gone far when a new sound entered the equation. A faint but steady hissing. Megan was tied to the tracks in front of me. I stopped where I was, unwilling to reach out when I didn't know where those snakes were.
Megan.
No response.
Megan!
A faint moan. This time, like a larger snake stirring in its nest. Not that snakes actually moan outside of sci-fi original movies.
Wake up, and tell your hair not to bite me before the roller coaster crushes us both.
There was a sharp gasp then, before Megan asked wearily,
Annie?
It's me. Where's your head? Keep talking so I can cut you free.
What the hell is going on?
Where are we?
The snakes continued to hiss angrily as she spoke. At least now I could tell where they were. That was a nice, potentially non-venomous change.
You know the Midsummer Night Scream?
I asked, as I started to cut.
Of course, I know the-
No.
No.
Megan sounded rightly horrified.
You are not telling me that.
I am. I cut another rope. You're going to need to climb down once you're loose. I still have to find Celia, and their train spotter is working on getting the coaster moving. There was a pause. I hate that that was a sentence.
I'm getting that a lot today. I think this is the last rope. Hold on to something. It is.
There was a rustle as Megan grabbed the track. I sliced through the rope.
You humans need better night vision.
I'll put it on the mad science wish list. Can you get down? Do I have a choice? Megan began climbing past me. I felt a snake's tongue caress my cheek, light as a whisper, and then she was gone, descending toward the water. That would have been the smart thing to do. I started climbing up instead. Light was beginning to seep into the tunnel, flowing through the hole where the train would emerge, triumphant, from the animatronic underworld, when I found Celia. Her eyes were open, scanning the darkness below her. She relaxed slightly when she saw me.
I was wondering whether the cavalry was coming, she said.
We don't have much time, I replied, and grabbed the first loop of visible rope.
Hold on, I'm getting you out of here.
From behind us, the sound of a train whipping along the track made it clear how little time we actually had. Celia closed her eyes.
Wake me when we're dead, she said.
No, I snarled, and kept cutting.
No, and no, and no!
We were maybe 30 feet above the artificial lake, which I knew got deeper around the tracks for the sake of the illusion. If we fell right, if we were lucky, the rope gave way. I grabbed Celia, flinging both of us away from the tracks, dropping like rocks into the dark below. Celia shrieked. The Midsummer Night Scream passed by harmlessly overhead, a great rocketing mechanism of sound and steel and mayhem. And we were falling, and there was nothing I could do but close my eyes and let it happen. The shock of hitting the water knocked my eyes right open. Celia and I were driven below the surface, and my feet hit the bottom before I kicked and pushed us up again, sputtering and soaked, into the drier dark. Celia clung to me. I clung to Celia. Then, in relief and surprise, we started to laugh.
We're alive! She shouted.
Yes! We didn't die!
No! We...
Celia stopped.
Is this over?
No, I said again, my own levity fading. But it will be soon.
Come on, let's find a maintenance door.
Dripping, shaking, and exhausted, we made our way toward the edge of the lake, moving one step closer to safety. We had a long way yet to go. When we re-emerged from the maintenance door in the side of the structure, we found ourselves faced with the usual nest of tangled landscaping and complicated design, intended to keep guests from stumbling over anything they shouldn't. We climbed over it all, Celia helping me when my skates made it difficult to balance, until we reached the fence to the queue area. After hopping that, it was a simple matter to head back to the front of the ride. Sam was still there, standing on Emily's shoulders, keeping her pinned down. Fern and Megan were behind him, looking warily at Colin and Joshua. I didn't know why they hadn't run away. I would have run if one of my enemies had been planning to come back with reinforcements. Maybe they had more loyalty in them than I'd expected. Maybe they had stayed for Emily.
It's not too late, said Colin, his eyes clearly fixed on me. I hurt you. Now you've hurt me. With your power and my skill, we could find a cleaner way to accomplish all our goals. You could help me truly realize Lowry's dream.
Okay, one, if Lowry was a sorcerer, I don't want to know, I said. Two, I'm not working with you. And three, I don't have any power to offer. I sold it for the chance to beat you.
I'd sold it for so much more than that. But my little white lie was absolutely justified by the look of horror and disgust that crossed his face.
Impossible. No one would give up that kind of power.
I don't know. Sailor Moon did at least twice. I will diminish and go into the West, but not before I kick your ass.
Colin sneered. You'll fail. You and your little collection of monsters can't possibly...
He froze. Literally. Both he and Joshua stopped where they were, not moving, not visibly breathing. I started to turn.
I wouldn't do that if I were you, said Megan wearily. Let me get my glasses back on.
Why did they let you keep those instead of just blindfolding you?
Asked Sam. He glanced at me and smiled, just a little.
Hey, missed you.
Well, you know, places to go, people to save. I shrugged extravagantly. I lived.
What did you mean about selling
later? I offered what I hoped was an encouraging smile. I'll tell you later. Sam nodded.
I'll make sure you do, he said.
How about you can the sweet moment and let me up? Demanded Emily. You can't keep me here forever.
No, I said. We can't. But you're probably going to wish we had. She didn't have an answer for that. Getting Emily to drop the shields, keeping the dead out of Lowryland, wasn't really an option. So we did the next best thing. We walked. Sam used his tail to pin her arms to her sides, and Celia and Fern carried her, while Megan walked alongside as a constant reminder of what would happen if she tried too hard to escape. The memory of what had happened to Colin and Joshua after Megan got close to them was clearly very fresh in Emily's mind, because she didn't fight. The gaze of the Pliny's Gorgon doesn't petrify. It only stuns. But their venom is one of the strongest petrifying agents known to man, and the snakes on their heads make an excellent delivery agent. I'd been trying to figure out how I was going to find the will to kill two men. Megan had just walked up to them and allowed her hair to bite them. In the morning, the groundskeepers were going to find two really weird new statues. I didn't know how to feel about that yet. I was pretty sure I was going to be okay with it. I was equally sure that that would mean there was something wrong with me. Mary and Rose were waiting just outside the park gate. Both were wearing what I thought of as their funeral clothes. Mary in a knee-length skirt and a white blouse with a Peter Pan collar. Rose in a green silk prom gown. Emily, who had been quiet up until that point, started to kick and scream when she saw them.
No! She shouted. No! 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 Turn me to stone! Kill me! I don't care! Not this!
You earned this, said Mary, in a voice like a tomb door swinging closed. And there was nothing else to say, and no other way for this to end.
Rose and Mary each took Emily by an arm, taking a step backward. The air grew hazy around them, creating the impression of a long road running off to nowhere.
Wait, I said.
They stopped, looking at me.
What's going to happen to her now?
She swore by the ocean lady that no harm would come to you while you were in her company, said Rose. Maybe she shouldn't have done that. What comes next is of her own creation. Emily was screaming when the three of them disappeared, leaving the rest of us to stare silently at the place where they had been. Megan spoke first.
Fuck this, she said. I'm going back to the hospital and finishing my residency. Epilogue. Well, hell. Now what?
Enid Healy. A shitty company apartment, 5 miles outside of Lakeland, Florida. 3 days later.
You're sure you won't change your mind? Asked Sophie. I looked at the keys in the palm of my hand. They were little and rusty, worn smooth by dozens of hands. They were mine. They were Melody West's. The door they unlocked was small and safe and far from the covenant of St. George, and while I had lived behind it, I had been small and safe too. I'm sure, I said, and held them out to her with a quick, sad smile. Better not ask again. People will think you're showing favoritism. I can't show favoritism, she said. You don't work here anymore. Then, making no effort at all to hide her tears, she reached out and pulled me into a hug. I let her. She'd earned it. And as I hugged her back, I couldn't help feeling like I'd earned it a little bit too. When we pulled away from each other, Sophie kept my hands and said seriously, You promise me you're not going back to him. You promise? I do, I said, not turning. I gestured to the car waiting by the sidewalk, avocado green and already packed with the strangest road trip buddies I would ever have. Fern was perched on the roof, light as a feather. Celia was standing next to the driver's side door, waiting for me. Sam. Sam was on the sidewalk, and I knew that if I turned, he'd be smiling, glad to go anywhere with me, as long as I didn't send him away again. Sophie glanced over my shoulder, and she saw that smile. I know she did, because she squeezed my hands, leaned in a little closer and said, I like this one. Take care of him. I will, I said. Then she let me go, and I turned and walked away. Colin and Joshua were officially missing. I didn't know what happened to their weird statues, and I didn't want to. The disaster in Deep Down had accomplished the unthinkable, closing all of Lowry Land for a week while a full safety review was conducted and the rides were repaired. It was probably costing the company millions in lost revenue and bad publicity. Guess without the cabal redistributing things, their luck had finally run out. That was okay. If Lowry Entertainment could survive the dry spell, their luck would rebalance and they'd endure. There's always room in the world for a little more magic. There was room in me for a lot more magic. The fire in my fingers was officially gone, ceded to the crossroads as collateral against whatever they were going to ask for. I was willing to wait to find out what that was. Mary was right about one thing. Whatever the crossroads asked of me was probably going to be more than I was willing to pay. Only probably. As I looked at Sam, standing there, waiting for me, alive, I was fairly sure that there was no price I wouldn't have been willing to pay for the opportunity to be here. Got everything? He asked. I hefted my backpack. Everything worth taking, I said. Got any idea where we're going? Celia's driving, I said. She'll get us where we need to be. And on that note, get in, losers, said Celia. I want to be in South Carolina before morning. What's in South Carolina? Asked Fern. Celia grinned. I have no idea, but it's on the way to Maine. Fern slid off the roof and into the front passenger seat, leaving me to fold myself into the back seat with Sam. Celia turned the air conditioning on. Sam squirmed into a hoodie that would have been way too warm to wear outside, and as soon as the hood was up, I felt his tail wrap around my ankle. Fern was happily singing along to some piece of crossover pop country fluff, and as I let my head droop to rest against Sam's shoulder and closed my eyes, I knew one thing was for certain. Wherever we went next, I was better off in the company of friends. The road rolled by under our wheels, and I drifted slowly off to sleep. Finally safe, finally secure, and finally a little bit closer to home.
This has been an Audible Studios production of Tricks for Free, Encrypted Book 7. Written by Seanan McGuire, performed by Emily Bauer. Executive producers Steve Feldberg and Mike Charzik. Producer Neil Basic. Copyright 2018 by Sean N. McGuire. Sound recording copyright 2018 by Audible, Inc. Audible Studios is a division of Audible, Inc.
Audible hopes you have enjoyed this program.